Welcome to Create Photography. This is Daniel. In today's episode, we'll have a conversation with Abby Traylor Smith. Abby Traylor Smith was born in Wales and is based in London. She is a self-taught documentary and portrait photographer. Her work draws primarily on an emotional response and engagement with her subjects. She spent 8 years as a photographer with the Daily Telegraph, covering world events such as the Darfur conflict, the Iraq war, and the Asian tsunami, before deciding to go freelance in 2007. She has received many awards, including a World Press Photo Award for her image of Shannon from the Big O Project. We'll talk about that project today. She also won the IdeaStap Magnum Photographic Award. Abby, welcome to Create Photography. I'm very excited to speak with you today.
Oh, it's lovely to be here. Thanks for your patience as well in getting all the technical bits set up. But I'm excited too.
So first of all, I want to ask you, how are you doing? You know, you mentioned to me that unfortunately you broke your leg, I believe, right, recently?
No, I fractured my foot falling out of my shed trying to set up my birthday party, but I'm hobbling around now without a crutch. So I think I was actually quite lucky. So yes, that's just a, you find me a bit more healed and hobbling.
It's not the greatest thing to happen, but you're recovering well, it sounds like.
Yes, thank you very much.
That's great. Okay, so I want to kind of start a little bit with the beginning. So I read you were born in Wales. Did you grow up in Wales as well?
I did, yeah. I was born and raised there. And then do you want me to sort of talk about how I got into photography?
Yeah, absolutely. That would have been one of my next questions.
Well, my parents had both been to art college and gave me a camera when I was a teenager and, you know, gave me their old enlarger and taught me how to use it and everything. But then when it came to going off to university, I'd watched a lot of legal dramas and my parents sort of said, why don't you go off to law school because you can do art in your spare time. And then, so I went off to London and just really missed a creative outlet and found the student newspaper was sort of looking for photographers to work with them. And then I just became obsessed. So that was my kind of route into photography in a nutshell, discovering it. That's what I wanted to do. And then I met a bunch of photographers on the street one day outside the student union, and Princess Diana had died and Andrew Morton had just written a book about her, and everyone was there, all the press were there to see the book being brought to the bookshop. And I just got chatting to people and ended up on work experience. And, you know, after graduating, decided that I'd give myself a year to get work before going off to sort of train as a barrister or solicitor or whatever. And then I just went, you know, I went for it sort of thing in that year. And by the end of the year, I'd forgotten that my plan was to ever go back to the legal profession.
And then I read, so when did you then work for the Telegraph? Was that also around that time? Okay.
That was around that time, yeah. When I met all those photographers on the street and I went out on work experience with some of them, and I did some work experience at the Telegraph, and they didn't have any women working there at the time. So when I graduated, I went along with my portfolio and just asked them to give me a try, basically. And then that was the start of kind of 8 years working for them full time. I just got really lucky.
And you did, you really were then, I mean, traditionally, right, this is called, well, it's reportage, but it's documentary photography. So you were traveling, you were documenting events and
exactly,
so forth.
Yeah, no, it was, I was working for the news desk and started off in London and the UK and then very quickly became, all over the world. It was a real in at the deep end, shall we say. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was a kind of fake it till you make it type attitude, I think.
Yeah. But I'm sure it was a great formative experience for you.
It was an incredible experience, and it was so fast learning because there was no time to kind of doubt yourself, or, you know, because you had like a picture editor screaming at you going, where are the pictures, you know, before you even got to the job sort of thing. So so it was kind of, you didn't have time to be scared about where you were going or what you were doing or, you know, what you might find when you get there, because, you know, you're on a mission, and it was exhilarating and exciting and an incredible way to, I mean, it was the best education ever, I think. And I also learned about ethics and what's important and how to approach people and all that kind of thing as well, you know, again, because there wasn't time to think about any of it.
You know, how about, so you reported on wars and conflicts. I mean, obviously you have to kind of watch out for your personal safety too. So how did you go about, did you just, again, was that learning by doing, or did you have some people who could help you with, you know, how do you
do this
safely?
That was very much learning by doing.
Okay.
That was very much learning by doing. And because I was the only woman that worked there, I had to wait till they'd sent all the other guys out to Iraq and then say to the picture editor, look, when are you going to send me? Why aren't you sending me? Hmm. So, I mean, personal safety, I think, wasn't so much of a consideration as it perhaps should have been.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think we all have to take responsibility for ourselves, don't we? And the most important thing in any of these scenarios is to listen to your instinct. And I'm always like quizzing photographers and people or whoever, you know, about places they've been and experiences they've had, and trying to learn how, you know, we all, what's the best way to navigate this world, whether you're in the middle of a conflict zone or, you know, at home in the middle of a family drama.
Yeah. and then I'm sure you learned a lot there in those, you know, obviously more dangerous, you know, places, so to say, that you can apply here as well, right? When you're, London is a big city too, right? So
exactly.
Yeah. You then eventually started freelancing, correct?
Yeah, what happened was, I mean, after sort of 8 years, there was a lot of repetition, you know, it was kind of, there was a lot of going to Christie's or Sotheby's to photograph the latest Stradivari on sale, or, you know, it's a hot day, let's go to the zoo and photograph them giving the animals ice creams, or, you know, Chelsea Flower Show, all these other things, you know. And I, despite being an absolute, despite loving the pace and the buzz and the kind of, I also started to find that I wanted to spend more time on the ground, you know, that I wanted to spend more time on the story. And I think what happened was in 2004, 2005, there was the Asian tsunami that hit, and I got sent out on Boxing Day. And I ended up being away for sort of 3 weeks in the end. I was there in Thailand for like 10 days and then went to Banda Aceh for another couple of weeks. And I became completely immersed in the story and the people, and that sort of made me realise that if I wanted to do more long-term, more in-depth work, I would have to go it on my own, you know. But then it took another couple of years to build up the courage to quit my contract, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah. Because that's a scary thing, right? You had kind of at that point, right, I assumed, as obviously it was you were established by that point and, you know, you've done that for a while, but then you had to kind of, you cut the cord.
Yeah,
so
but as we all know, you know, all the different areas of photography are quite different, aren't they? From the magazine world to the fine art world, to the gallery world, to the book world. It's all kind of, you know, you have to sort of make your mark from the beginning in each one. So it was terrifying. But, and as someone was taking the mickey out of me the other day, they were like, right, so in the middle of a global recession you quit your contract to go freelance? And I was like, yeah, when you put it like that, it might not have been the best decision.
That's right.
But sometimes you've just got to go and do things because you can't not do them anymore, mm-hmm. you know, you've got to try, haven't you?
Yep.
And then very quickly I picked up various clients, and, you know, that was, God, however, 10, 15 years ago.
Because that seems always, you know, that's a topic with, it's maybe not the most creative topic, right? It's the whole issue around marketing, getting clients and so forth. Is that something that came easy to you, or how, I mean, obviously you did pick them up, but.
I mean, I meet photographers who are really on it and they email out newsletters and all that stuff, and I'm really rubbish. It's just not my forte. And I guess I've been very lucky that whenever I've been on you know, assignments with people.
Yep.
Quite often I'm asked back, and then those people move to other places, and then the old people and the new people hire me. Do you see what I mean? So yep. it's kind of about ticked along okay.
Mm-hmm.
But then it was funny because recently I was diagnosed with ADHD, so now I realise why my admin's not been up to par. So, but we do have to do all that side of it, you know.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I can't remember what the question was really. But
No. Yeah. But it's about the marketing and all. And but you said it sounded like, you know, if I paraphrase this a little. So some of that happened for you also quite organically, if that might be a term, or you know, like you.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I think it has really, because I've just followed what I wanted to do at every stage, and kind of I've sort of, you know, and that's not to mean I haven't been terrified at every stage, but yeah. I kind of forced myself to feel the fear and feel sick and do it anyway, I suppose. Even with this book, I mean, this book was sort of probably ready to be published a few years ago, but this book, I've just brought out my first book, Kiss It, about a young woman called Shannon growing up with obesity and or growing up fat. And, you know, part of the reason it's taken so long, I'm not going to lie, is because each stage is so terrifying. Like even, you know, starting the project, oh my God, terrifying. In the middle of it, when you're kind of sick of it, you know, you've got to keep going. And then you think you've done the hard work, and then you realize that finishing it is the hard work.
Yeah.
And then there's all these other stages, you know, like, oh God, now I've got to do a video for the Kickstarter, and that's terrifying.
Yeah.
And that's going to, you know, so, and I think if we're being honest, we all have these moments, and that's part of the kind of roller coaster of being a creative person, I think,
mm-hmm.
and having the privilege that we all do of living this life and, you know, being able to carry a camera around to make sense of it all.
Yeah, that's a great lead-in. So you already alluded a little bit to the book project, and I want to get to that in more depth as well. I'd like to start with some of your projects, and you mentioned to me you started to get much more interested in long-form projects, you know, back then when you were in Asia and getting more immersed in projects. So I'd like to start with The Big O, which is the project for which you won the World Press Photo Award and also a Magnum Photographic Award. You already told me a little bit, but, you know, specific about Shannon and the book project, but could you maybe tell me a little bit more about how this project started and what's the topic and all that?
Yeah. And then I've been working, you know, freelancing for a few years, and then I became pregnant, and I was, again, in one of those, oh my God, I'm terrified moments. And I thought, what am I going to do? I've only got like 8 months or, you know, 7 months or whatever to make some work that I really care about. And I grew up, you know, I got very chubby when I was a sort of tween, as we call them nowadays.
Yep.
And weight's been an issue my whole life. And it's something I've always thought about, how to, you know, like I did art A-level at school and I made paintings about it and stuff, but they were never that good, you know, and it's always been a subject that's kind of interest me, and it's my subject. And I thought, well, now's the time to make, you know, what is it I care about? When I look at other people's work that I kind of think, wow, that is, you know, so powerful, it's quite often, you can see it's because they really care about it. So that's when I realised I'd have to look at kind of teenage obesity. So that's how The Big O started. And I called it The Big O because, you know, when I was growing up, sort of it was cancer was called the Big C. And, it was referred as the Big C because it was the kind of thing to be scared of that nobody wanted to talk about. And 12 years ago, that's very much how obesity seemed to me.
Mm-hmm.
For me personally, and, you know, locally in the UK and also globally, you know, and I started looking into it, and I was like, okay, no, can't be scared about this anymore. Got to get on with it. So that's what kicked off The Big O. And that's led to kind of me documenting various young people who are fat or who are classed as overweight or obese,
mm-hmm.
and just seeing what happens in their lives, you know, not necessarily seeking out the biggest people I can find, but just a kind of, you know, a selection of the sort of people we see every day on the street. And that was born out of a kind of desire to investigate the sort of mental health aspect of it all as well. Like, why are we all getting fat and how is it making us all feeling? Because I know for me, it's been a thing of shame. So anyway, it's been a massive journey, but that's how it sort of all came about, basically. The fear of like, oh my goodness, I'm going to be a mother. I'm never going to have time to pick up a camera again. I've got to get on and make some work that really I really care about. And Kiss It, the book, is a chapter of that work about one woman that also sort of interweaves old diaries of mine from when I was a teenager into the story. So
Kiss It is the book project that just, I think it you just released it, or I guess pretty recent.
Like literally in the last couple of weeks.
Oh, nice. Yeah, okay.
Published, yeah.
So we happen to have good timing.
Yeah, I've been like hobbling around with a fractured foot and you know, 300 books to sign and Kickstarter gifts to send out. Anyway, so it's all very exciting at the moment. So you're catching me at a very...
exciting, busy time. Yeah.
Yeah, the exciting busy time as opposed to those moments we all have when we're like, oh my God, is the phone ever going to ring again?
Yes. So I'm curious before we, and I want to talk a little bit more about the specifics of the book project, but going back to the overall project. So something you mentioned to me earlier on, you know, with your early experiences working for the Telegraph, you know, you kind of learned how to approach people and so forth, which is also something, right, that's speaking now for myself as a, you know, also doing photography now on the side more, but, you know, can be terrifying, right? We are afraid of approaching, asking people for something. And so kind of curious, you know, how you went about this with the subjects you eventually met. And it sounds like, you know, you like with Shannon, you clearly had a long time relationship as well, because you followed her over years. Yeah, how did you go about this initial touch?
Well, I did think to myself, how am I going to find fat kids to be in my project about, you know, this subject? Because it is one of the last taboos. Like the NHS, the National Health System in the UK, has set up some obesity clinics recently. And I've been trying to get access, like, and they just will not let us in because the staff there themselves call it the last taboo, which is just ridiculous. So anyway, so it was really difficult. How am I going to find people? And then I ended up, because you can't sort of stop people on the street and say, hey, I notice your 12-year-old child's really fat, you know, do you want to come and chat to me? You get a slap in the face. So at the beginning, I met people through a press conference of a health website where they had some young people involved, and it was Shannon that was there. So I talked to a colleague of mine, a health journalist, who said, oh, what are you working on at the moment? And I told her about my idea, and she told me about this launch of this website, and she said, there'll be lots of young people there, why don't you come along and chat to some of them? And Shannon was there reading out a poem from her kind of weight management after school club about how, you know, she was sick of being judged and she wanted people to walk in her shoes for a day before they, you know, told her to eat less and exercise more. And I was just like, wow. And then once you find what, it just took time as well. That's the other, I mean, it's not just all those moments of terror that made the project take so long. It's also gaining people's trust and, you know, finding people, and then finding people who their parents agree, even if they want to do it, but then their parents might not want them to be involved, or do you know what I mean?
Yep. Yep.
So through, and then you can't go through doctors because of the confidentiality and the ethics.
Right.
So all my kind of leads through medical, you know, all my medical leads sort of came to dead ends. And then it was just sort of as the project went on, and I sort of started to get pictures and just slowly meet people and tell people what I was doing. It became organic.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's so much patience involved in this game, isn't there?
I can imagine. Yeah. Yeah, because it sounds incredibly difficult to approach those subjects, right? It's really not as simple.
And so what I've realized about approaching people is that you have to be you. You have to approach people with sort of truth and honesty. And so when I went up to Shannon, I just said, you know, hi, I'm Abby, I'm a photographer, you know, I'm working on a project on childhood obesity. And, you know, I just wondered if there's any chance you'd sit with me and have a cup of tea with your family and hear more about it and see if you'd be interested in being involved.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's, and give you know, and if I'm stopping someone on the street because I want to make a picture about something and I need to get consent from them or whatever, then it's the same thing. It's kind of, I think what we fear is rejection. So if someone says no, that hurts, doesn't it? Because it boils down to kind of rejection. So I think that's what's good when you're working for a newspaper, because you don't have time to kind of sit around and go, yeah, oh, someone rejected me, or right, like, shit, person, I've got to find them.
You move on, right? Do you find something
you
else?
Yeah, you move on. But it's not easy, you know? It's not easy, and it is terrifying,
mm-hmm,
you know, especially talking to people you don't know. I guess it's about getting in the zone, isn't it?
Yep.
You know,
yep,
got to psych yourself up and get in the zone, or fake it till you make it, or whatever.
Yep, yep.
You know.
So talking about the book itself, so first of all, it's available just for our audience on ghostbooks.com, but it's ghost without a H, so it's G-O-S-T.
Let me say ghost.
Ghost. Okay, so yeah, I mispronounced. Okay, ghost books. Okay, ghost is the right pronunciation. Okay, thank you. Yeah. So ghostbooks.com, and we'll link to it specifically in the show notes. So I read that you used Kickstarter to fund it.
I did, yeah.
Can you tell me about that a little bit and that experience?
I'm sure your listeners have some experience of Kickstarter. I mean, again, it's terrifying asking friends and family, but I think if you really believe in what you do, you've got to go for it, haven't you? And but that took me 2 or 3 years to psych myself up to do that, because you have to really put yourself out there with Kickstarter, and it forces you to do all those cringy things that some of us don't like marketing.
Yep.
so it was a really good exercise, because, you know, sometimes we need a deadline, or we need a kind of a reason to go for it. So I sort of, in the end, I saw it as, after sort of 3 years of being terrified, I was like, right, come on, this is an opportunity to, you know, reach people.
Mm-hmm.
But it is an absolute roller coaster of a ride doing a Kickstarter, and there's always a bit in the middle where it goes really quiet and you think it's all, you know, nothing's ever going to work. But again, I guess you just channel that into pushing it. And so I don't know what advice I'd give people doing a Kickstarter. I just say, you've just got to go for it.
Yep.
You know,
just do it.
You've just got to go for it. Just do it. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Was it one of those where obviously you worked on the big O for, you know, for a long time, right? I mean, you started, I don't remember now the exact year when you started it, but it was quite a while ago.
It would have been like 2010.
Right. Okay. So, yeah. So you got, and so you had a really big body of work, I think, right? On the Big O project, and then on Shannon, I guess, specifically. At what point then, well, first of all, and I want to relate it back to Kickstarter, but at what point did you know that A, you want to do a book, and then B, that it's going to be focused on, you know, Shannon, and then obviously you're going to fund it with Kickstarter. So is that, were you kind of deciding that, I guess, where I'm going with this, you know, I'm just going to do it and I'm going to let the project evolve?
I think what happened was, I started out, and then after a few years I'd won an award, because I'd won also a prize in the Taylor Wessing Photo Prize for an image from it.
Yep.
And I showed some friends and they were like, you know, this would make a really good book. And I was like, oh, maybe it would, you know. So that's when I started thinking of doing a book. And then a few years later, started kind of, you know, where you get all your mini prints out and you litter your house in them like some insane person. And I realised that I had lots more images of Shannon than I did of everybody else. So I sort of thought, well, maybe there'd be two parts of the book, you know. And it just was how things came out in the course of the edits.
Yep.
But obviously I still touch base with the others, because I don't feel like the whole umbrella project is quite finished yet, mm-hmm, you know. So my dream would be to kind of do a book where you look at fat people around the world,
mm-hmm,
you know. That's the gist of things.
Specifically on about the creative process of the book project, did you help, you know, there's many things, right, to think about. There's you select the pictures, you sequence them, the layout, the typography. I mean, it can seem overwhelming, right, to think about all of this, certainly at once. Did you have help?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I've got lots of photo mates that I bug, and there's specifically a group of women that I meet up with and we ban ourselves from talking any gossip about men or love lives or anything like that. We just sit and talk about our practice with each other, and they all really helped me to see that maybe the first book should be about Shannon, you know, because so it's constant conversations, whether it's with my group of amazing women or with other photo mates or other creatives or whatever. I do find it interesting to get people's perspective, even if someone says something to you and you think, nah, do you know what I mean? No, mm-hmm. what they've suggested does not sit well with me. It's almost like a test of how it sits with your instincts. So I think that that's what I think is beautiful about the photography community these days. There's so much more collaboration and discussion than there was when I started out like 20 years ago, you know. Mm-hmm. It was much more of a kind of competitive environment, whereas now it feels like much more of a collaborative environment.
Yeah.
But I've always had like mates, you know, my photo mates that I sit around and talk photography with. So, you know, so much so that my other mates are like, is it a photo thing before they agree to come out?
Yeah, exactly. We don't want to talk about photography today.
Yeah, exactly. If it's you and a bunch of photo mates, I'm busy. Yeah. And I find that really, really useful. I think it's because I didn't go to art school and I haven't actually studied photography, and I've looked into doing MAs and stuff, but they're expensive, and I decided to plough the money into the work instead. But I've always, you know, feel like I've missed out on not studying photography and, you know, at art school or whatever.
Now, I'm curious, this is just a silly technical question that I actually meant to ask you earlier, is when you started out, did you actually start on film or did you start digital?
I did.
Oh, you did? Okay.
I did start on film. Yeah, okay. It was mad. But only for like 6 months. So after 6 months of working at the Telegraph, I had to collect one of the first ever digital cameras on the way to the airport for my first ever foreign shoot. And then I had to work out how to, you know, get the computer talking to the phone line to send the pictures back. It was mental. And then that whole period, it was like every 6 months, we all had to buy new kit every 6 months because the cameras were just being upgraded so quickly. You know, so when I first started working, I'd be back at the office processing films, chatting to other photographers. But within a year, you know, we were all on our laptops doing, you know, working from cafes or the back of our cars or whatever to file our images back.
Yep.
So it was quite interesting, you know, and I suppose I'm of that generation that grew up analog and then became digital.
Are you going back to film at some point or not really?
Well, the Big O is shot on film.
Oh, it is on film. Okay.
Oh, yeah, cool. It's shot on, I use a Mamiya 7 medium format for that.
Yep.
And also for my Still Human, Still Here Asylum project, that's all shot on film as well. Cool. I tend to shoot my personal work on film because I can take my time with it, you know, and it's just very expensive and slow, but slow is good sometimes. But so I use all different cameras for different jobs, really.
Yeah, okay. And for your professional work, do you tend to be mostly digital or is it also a mix?
Yes.
Okay.
No, it's occasionally someone will commission me to do, you know, something, a really nice assignment or project on the film, but it's very, very rare.
Okay. Typically digital. Okay, got it. And that brings me actually to my next question. So I love your portraits and that it looks like you also photographed many famous people, including Emma Watson and Keira Knightley and so forth. And it's, of course, always cool to see that in a portfolio. So I'm kind of curious about, you know, how that has been for you to work. You know, that always seems something, again, you know, we talk about terrifying or intimidating or whatever when you work with somebody who's so famous.
Yeah, the one thing that doesn't terrify me is celebrity.
Yeah.
And especially, I think, when I first started, it did terrify me a bit, but I think I've realized now that people are just people. Wherever you find them in life, and some people are lovely and some people aren't. So I get a lot less nervous these days, but especially with someone like Keira, like she was so down to earth and lovely and warm. And like, as soon as we all met, we were like, this is going to be a good trip, you know? Mm-hmm. mind you, I don't think I'd be quite so chilled if I had to photograph like George Clooney or like Bradley Cooper. I think that might bring on the nerves big time. But I think So with sometimes with celebrities, I think it's hard to get their real personality, you know?
Yep.
Because they're used to being switched on.
Yep, they're so used to playing different roles and all that, right?
Exactly.
So, yep. Mm-hmm.
And quite often actors and actresses really hate having their pitch taken because they find it a lot more intrusive than being on film, you know? So I do think it's challenging. I do think celebrities are more challenging than... I don't know, people are challenging, aren't they? Some people are great and some people are challenging.
Yeah, I'm sure some are not that easy going. But did you, with those examples or with, you know, there are many other examples on your portfolio that I've seen of people who are well-known or celebrities, did you typically get some time with them or not that much?
Because it really varies. Like some people I'd get 5 minutes and others, you know, I'd be on a trip for 3 days with them.
Okay.
So, I mean, you've got to be, I mean, that's what's good about having a newspaper background is, you know to get something in the first few minutes.
Yeah, if you need to.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, the most terrifying was when I worked for the Telegraph and they sent me over to Washington to photograph Colin Powell.
Oh.
And I think it was in the Pentagon.
Hmm.
Would that be right?
Yeah, that would be right. I think you're right about that.
Okay, cool.
That.
So, yep. So we were waiting for him and he literally walked in the door. I took two frames and then I was basically almost ushered out when I sort of said just one more frame. So since that early terrifying experience, I've learned now to get in there quick and then anything else is a bonus. But yeah, celebrities are people, aren't they?
Yeah.
Especially, it's always their people that are more annoying. They're always really lovely. But then I suppose that's their people's job, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so, of course, you took many portraits of non-famous people. And we, you know, of course, the Big O is one of them, if you will. And also one of the series that stood out to me. I mean, there's many, but stood out to me at the Ladies of Guerra. And what I noticed,
I loved that
series. And one thing I noticed, which I thought was really, really cool and beautiful, also was kind of a really nice consistency across that series. So it was maybe a consistency in style, but and I guess my question where I'm going with this is a little bit. And I know you do some work in film. You just mentioned that to me now, but also. Is that something you think about when you do these, you know, these projects or, you know, like this Ladies of Guerra or whatever, that consistency or style piece, I guess. I'm just curious about that. Is that something you think about?
Yes, I started consciously thinking about that when I left the Telegraph, because when you work for a newspaper, you're very much shooting to a style, especially a newspaper like the Telegraph, which is kind of, you know, they want nice, tight and bright long lens pictures and nothing too, you know, by the end of my time working there, the picture editor was kind of take the mickey out of me for being too arty or whatever. So when I left, it was a real journey to find my voice as a photographer. And what I think really helps is whatever piece of work you're doing, that you choose a lens, you choose a camera, you choose a way you're going to approach it, because that's what help brings a kind of consistency to a body of work. That's what I kind of realized looking at other people's work. You know, they weren't kind of shooting on a 16 and then a 24 and then a 50 and then an 85 and then whipping out the 500. It was a kind of, you know, you'd have, so that helps with, I think, bringing the images together and making them feel like so it was very much a conscious decision. And that time when I sort of started out on my own to sort of start looking for my voice and how, if I was going to shoot a body of work, then what would be my, you know, how am I going to author it?
Yeah, that's a good point. So you're really thinking about, obviously, just to kind of repeat what you just said, but lens choice is a good example, right? You don't want to use a super long and the white and you know.
Yeah, I was at a workshop with Chris Morris where he was kind of, he's such a funny guy who, you know, the guy from Seven that's done all the stuff in the White House. Anyway, his stuff's amazing and he was being very funny showing different pictures on different lenses, and it's it just sort of made me realize it doesn't work when, for me anyway, when you see things in all different, you know, lenses. It looks like you don't know what you're doing. And then also something I read that Nachwe said about getting prepared to go out shooting was that, you know, he'd look at his kit and he'd pick two lenses for the day. And if the picture wasn't, you know, on that lens, then it wasn't his picture. And also, you know, that thing of, I think I sort of slightly gave up long lens work when I quit the newspaper, because for me, intimacy is so important, and you need to be up physically, up close and personal to do that. So I think for me, I do, whether it's now you're asking me about it, I'm explaining it like I've, you know, I sort of think all that before I do it, but I think I instinctively, that's the reasons for doing all those things. You know, picking a 28mm and a 50, say.
Yeah, so there's an instinctual element, obviously, and maybe part of it is also your experience, right? That you maybe don't think about it that actively anymore, but it still happens anyway. You don't.
Yeah, because I've been doing it for so long now. Yeah, you know, it's all kind of.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's all automatic these days.
Yeah.
Not that I'm ancient or anything, but you know, I started when I was like 21, so.
Right.
It's been 25 years, which is mad.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit more about another project. It's called, if I pronounce it correctly, Ebola Survivors.
Ebola Survivors, yeah.
Yeah. And so I was wondering, this series, so it has a documentarian feel to it, and we'll link to it in the show notes. It contains many portraits, but it also seems to me very artistic. I feel like I see, again, a very strong consistency, coherence in terms of the style, the colors, and so forth. And so we talked a little bit about that already. But I guess we talk a little bit more about the project itself. I'd be curious to learn more about it.
Well, that was an assignment for Oxfam to go over and cover the work they were doing to mitigate the Ebola disaster and spread and everything. And I think what I always do when I'm on an assignment, I can't remember where I listened to this years ago, but someone always said to me, I do what the client wants and then I do what I want. And I always try and make sure there's time for both.
Yep.
And then often the client chooses what I wanted anyway. So I think with any assignment, I'll make sure I get everything that the client's asked for. But in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, what's my experience of this story? You know, what's like the director's cut, if you like, the director's cut. So as I'm going along, I'm kind of thinking, yeah, that's a picture for my set, for my website, sort of to tell my version of the story, as it were.
So then I presume you were there for a little, at least for a few weeks, or?
Yeah, I think it might have been a week-long trip, sort of 3 or 4 days type thing. And I remember when I first lost to go, I felt quite scared. Because, and then it was only, I think it didn't come about, and I was sort of secretly relieved. And then a couple of months later, I was asked to go again. And by that point, I'd sort of done enough reading up on it to understand that, you know, it would be, I think that scared me more than going to a conflict zone, if that makes sense. And then when I understood it, I mean, my whole family were terrified when I went, but I'd sort of read up on it enough by that point to know that I understood what it was about and how to mitigate the risk.
Mm-hmm. And how do you, when you have projects or assignments like these, do you tend to, you know, there's different ways on how people, right, go about preparing for those. you know, obviously you have to work with the client and you get the assignment, and there are certain things you got to do and meet with the client, and, you know, you may even get a shot list, who knows, right? But or certain things that they want to have. But do you tend to do like a lot of research, or do you be more, are you maybe more in the, you know, the other extreme would be to just go with the flow?
I mean, sometimes I do, like with the Ebola, because I wanted to know, you know, how close I could get to the story without endangering myself or anyone else type thing. But quite often I go in blind, beyond a kind of, you know, general knowledge. And then I do a deep dive when I get home. But I guess it really varies. Quite often I like to go and experience things and then come back and research them, you know, or look into them more, or if I'm on the shoot, you know, look into something that evening or that's come up, or to help me get a better understanding. But I think I work best when I'm sort of talking to people. That's when I get all my best picture ideas and when things make sense. And I mean, that's what we are, aren't we, human beings? That's what we've been doing for kind of millennia, is storytelling. Yeah.
True.
Very true. So, that's how I like to learn. That would be my favorite way.
Mm-hmm. And going back to the project that you want to do at some point, is the global obesity project.
Yeah.
Is that something that you're, because that was kind of, before we kind of wrap up, that was one of my last questions. Are you, this is one project maybe that you're planning in your head, or is that something that...
I mean, I did apply for some funding a couple of years ago and I didn't win it and I felt a bit discouraged. And then I've been kind of, you know, doing the book and all the rest of it. So I think now that that's all done and I've got the launch party coming up next month in London, which I'm really excited about.
Oh, cool.
Then that'll be time to start thinking, okay, what's the next chapter, you know, what comes next? Because I do think it would be really interesting to look into the kind of psychologies and reasons of why it's occurring in so many different disparate and diverse places, you know?
Absolutely. And why it's occurring too, right? And I mean, part of it, right?
Yeah. I just think it's a really important story to be told, and it's a subject that's not going away. And so if any of your listeners have got some funding and want to send me off.
we'll send them to Abby.
Exactly.
That'll be good. Yeah, no, that sounds wonderful. Yeah, I think that will be really, it is really a huge problem, right? I mean, the numbers are unbelievable.
And everything about it is a problem. Like the way we talk about it is a problem. The way we feel about it is a problem. The way we address it is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Yep. So it's kind of, it's problematic on many levels. And I think it's time we brought some kind of sensitivity and understanding to the party, shall we say, and looking into it a bit more. Because actually it's amazing. Like, I got interviewed the other day by someone for the book, and she came up on screen. She was beautiful, like young, slim. And she said, "Oh my God, I found the book so moving." And I was like, "Really? Are you joking? You know, you look like amazing." And, you know, everyone's got their own experience of being a teenager and feeling like they don't fit in. And I think that's what I've realized the work's about as well, is, you know, beyond the word fat and bodies and all that kind of thing, it's about difference. You know, we're very quick to judge each other in today's world rather than kind of look to kind of understand, you know. Anyway, I'm getting a bit deep now.
No, but that's good after. Because but it is, and that's kind of like why I really also wanted to talk to you about your work, and that's exactly what I felt when I looked at, you know, when I looked at the pictures and read some of the stories or the background that was available online.
Thank you. I mean, another photographer, you know, a guy whose work I've admired for years, you know, sent me an email and said, you know, I've got to be honest that I am one of those people. I've been one of those kind of fattest bullies, like in my mind, not, you know, I haven't been going around bullying people, but in my mind, the way I've been thinking about it, and your work's really challenged me to think about that differently. And I just think, God, if we can all bring something to the table that helps other people look at things, just, you know, it feels like our minds are being narrowed these days rather than expanded, and we're being polarized and we're being forced into different camps, and it's just completely unnecessary, and it's only going to lead to more issues.
I agree. And I mean, you're right, many different levels here. I as you know, I'm actually from Switzerland, but I live in the US. I've been living here for a long time, but look at just the political polarization is unbelievable.
Exactly. Right? And I think that's what's exciting about a lot of the work people in our industry are out there making, that a lot of it does seem to be kind of challenging difference, challenging preconceptions,
mm-hmm.
challenging judgment, you know. Challenging polarization, challenging the kind of the state of the world, you know, whether you want to jump on the climate change ship or this ship or that ship, it's kind of, it all boils down to the same thing. that we've kind of lost touch with nature and ourselves, and
And I just meant to say, you know, this is also where, you know, art and photography and so forth, what can help, right? Point out those things in a...
I mean, more than help. I think it's essential. You know, the arts is always the first arena to be cut, you know, and I think it's one of the most important, because the arts, you know, and that's a kind of big umbrella, but that is how we have, you know, communication survived all these millennia. Because it's what makes people, it's what moves people, you know, music and writing and poetry and images and, you know, and people only stop to think when they feel moved.
Yeah. Yeah. Great point. Yep. So.
Well, I do anyway. I'm just talking about me.
No, but that's, I think that's very true. That's very true. So Abby, I have to wrap it up, I have a last and very easy question. Where can people best find you online?
Probably Instagram or my website, which is about to be updated, although it has been on the list for about 7 years now, but it's getting urgent now, which is abbytraynorsmith.com.
Okay.
And my obesity work can be seen on a website, thebigoproject.com.
Cool. And then the Instagram handle is?
It's abbyts, A-B-B-I-E-T-S.
All right. Well, I think that's what I wanted to talk to you about. I really appreciated your insights, and it was great speaking with you today. Thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you, Daniel. It's been really gentle and great questions, and I look forward to hearing your podcasts. I've been saving them up for my next road trip, which is coming up soon. That's what I like to do. I just love photography podcasts, and then I save them up and binge listen.
All right, this wraps up our episode with Abby Traylor-Smith. I hope you enjoyed it. As always, we'll have links in the show notes. Thanks so much for listening, and talk to you next time.